It is a Thursday. That means it's time to talk to the voice of the undefeated and now ranked in the top 25 KU Jayhawk football team. But first, before I get to that, Brian, it just kind of jumped out at me during that intro. And I think you may have noticed that Miller's voice is a little bit deeper now. Have you noticed that?
I was just thinking the same thing. The boy's all grown up.
It's kind of scary. It means I'm really getting old if my son's a senior this year. But I want to thank you for your hospitality when we were down there on our campus visit. And it was rainy and there was lightning and we had to go on a bus tour to go around campus, which wasn't ideal. But, you know, it's the best that they could do with the weather. And I must say that you guys, what you were able to do for my son there was pretty cool. And that was kind of the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, per se, in regards to how the day was going with the weather. So thank you again for that, my friend.
Absolutely. We had to jazz it up a little bit with some behind-the-scenes athletic department stuff since the main campus was a little bit dreary that day. Hopefully it still left a good taste in his mouth with Allen Fieldhouse and campus in general. But, yeah, you know, beautiful fall days in Lawrence are pretty common. You guys had the one outlier. So hopefully we'll get it back here for another visit real soon. It's sunny and gorgeous today. And I think it's going to be sunny and gorgeous when UCF comes next Saturday. So maybe bring him back to that one. Sound good?
That would be awesome. That would be awesome. Well, let's talk about the win over BYU. Certainly a game where the defense came up huge. Kobe Bryant with the hit on the first offensive play for BYU in the Big 12. That was quite a message that he sent there. Another defensive touchdown to Kenny Logan, pick six, which gave KU the lead for good. BYU outgained KU by, I think it was 15 yards in the game. But, you know, you and I have been talking about this, and I think this is the thing that's held me back a little bit. And I don't know if I'm fully in yet, but I'm definitely working my way there. Is that this KU defense, obviously against Illinois, came up big with a whole bunch of sacks and held them to seven until late in the third quarter. BYU's a very good offense, got perfect timing in regards to the turnovers and giving a jolt to the offense that, you know, was able to run the ball, establish that in the second half. But this defense has been very opportunistic so far this year.
Really has. And you look at the sack numbers, the TFLs, you know, the takeaways weren't piling up very much until last week. We talked about how at Nevada they forced five fumbles but didn't recover a single one, and what percentage of that is luck. The next week the ball did bounce their way, and so it was nice to see that kind of even out. But no matter what metrics you look at, this defense has been disruptive, they've been impactful, and it looks like the type of defense that is no steel curtain, let's be clear, but is formidable enough that should the offense perform at the rate we're expecting, this is a team that absolutely could compete to play in the Big 12 title game. We told you back in August when we first started these reports, a defense that was rated in the 120s a year ago in total defense, if they could just get even an extra stop per half, assuming the offense was able to stay healthy and be on that 36 or 40 point per game type trajectory, that Kansas would have a chance to win every single game. Not that they would, but they would be in every game, if you catch my drift, and have a chance to be an 8 or 9 win team. And the defense is showing that they could do even more than that, perhaps, more than getting an extra stop or two per half. Now, it's about to get real in a hurry on Saturday against your toughest opponent all season, and whether the coaching staff is willing to admit that or not, because you don't want to put something out there for Oklahoma or K-State or somebody else to look at as bulletin board material if you go all in on saying this is the best offensive line we'll face or this is the best front seven defensively we'll face. But the truth of the matter is, it probably is. And so this will be a great litmus test and measuring stick to see where KU's at. And these guys obviously put it on the Jayhawks something serious last year up in Lawrence, Kansas. And they remember what KU did 2 years ago, 57-56 down there. But for Kansas, as you start to look at the Big 12 power rankings and pecking order and all that, for anybody that thinks it's a far cry or a sheet to the moon type objective for me to sit here and say they might have a chance to play their way down to Dallas on December the 2nd, I'm not sure it's that far-fetched. There's three ranked teams in the Big 12 conference right now. Kansas is one of them. Most people's power rankings have Kansas either third or fourth in the conference. Top two get invited. So I say that to say, in regards to your defensive question, the biggest, you know, question to be answered as to whether or not Kansas is an upper echelon team or one of the middle of the pack teams, of which there's probably eight in this league, is can the defense stay consistent? And if they do, and Jalen Daniels stays healthy and upright, then yes, this dog will hunt. This is a Kansas team that could win 9 games, and the Kansas team that could absolutely be one of the top 2 that gets invited to Jerry World at the end of the year. And to think how far we would have come if that's the case, and we're just one game toward the Big 12 race, let's be clear, but to even be in that conversation right now, to see an AP poll that comes out Sunday, and yeah, we've seen Texas and Oklahoma in there before, but for Kansas to be the only other Big 12 team, to some that might feel like bizarro world, but that's the type of reality that Lance Leipold wants to make normal and regular thing around here. So hopefully that's the case for KU, but the defense staying strong is going to be as important as any for Kansas to stay on that path.
Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, brought to you each and every Thursday on the ticket by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky at 118 North Midland Boulevard. Call them at 738-5701. I think there's some truth to it, but I've been having a little bit of fun with my K-State friends from this standpoint, Brian. I said, listen, you need to be cheering for KU to beat Texas coming up on Saturday. And like, what? I'm like, yeah. Because we all know that it's going to be KU and K-State in the Big 12 championship game. We're going to have a rematch, okay? And for that to happen, that means that you need KU to beat Texas. And K-State fans are looking at me oddly and like, okay, I've lost my mind. And I said, no, think it through. Do you think you have a better chance to beat Kansas or Texas? And every K-State fan I've talked to about this immediately says we have a better chance to beat Kansas than Texas. So if you have a better chance to beat Kansas than Texas, why wouldn't you want Texas to lose this weekend? And yes, KU might be right there with you in the standings fighting for the two spots for the Big 12 championship game. But if you truly believe that you have a better chance to beat Kansas head-to-head in Lawrence or in a Big 12 championship game, then you should be. I'm not sitting here saying you should be yelling it to the rooftops if you're a diehard K-State fan, much like a diehard KU fan is not going to shout to the rooftops, I'm cheering for K-State. But there have been many times over the years where K-State has helped out KU in men's basketball certain times. There's certainly been times that we've seen it the other way around, but we haven't seen KU do any favors or K-State in football for a long time because they've been so bad for so long. So the theory that I have is, you know, maybe you don't want to be belling it from the rooftops, but if you're a K-State fan, and I hear some people say you should be cheering for all the teams in the state of Kansas, which I think that's somewhat hogwash because if they're your rival, probably not. But if it benefits your program, if it benefits your program, then why not be pushing for that other in-state school? Does that make any sense?
No, it does, and yet it probably is hard for most to get on board with because yes. in the same way that KU fans are okay with K-State getting better at basketball so long as it doesn't affect our pecking order and yes. our perch at the top, it's probably a similar feeling for K-State to see Kansas getting better at football. And well, so long as K-State still beats them every year, it always is picked higher, then maybe that's good for the rivalry. It becomes uncomfortable if Kansas ever does beat them.
Yes.
And so I where your K-State friends are coming from in that thinking. But, yeah, who knows what happens this week. And I don't mean to start talking about the Big 12 race, you know, in week 2 of league play. But the truth of the matter is when only 3 league teams are ranked right now, and Kansas is one of them, and the rest of the league just seems to be so up for grabs, it really is something that's you know, significantly possible, you know, for Kansas to reach for that dream, which Jalen Daniels kind of put out there a few weeks ago. And I don't think many, like, thought he was crazy when he said it, but it looks more and more real, you know, the way this team's been playing. But this is the game, and you wish it was a little bit later in your schedule and not right now in week 2 of league play, but this is the game where you'll find out where you're really at. And so let's talk next week and see how Kansas represented itself and see what the rest of the week looked like around the league. But I'll tell you what, these Jayhawks go down there with a lot of confidence, and it's not just because they won there 2 years ago. It's because of how much improved they are, you know, from this time a year ago. And they know that Texas, obviously, is a national title contender right now. And they'll have 101,000 fans chomping at the bit to put it on Kansas in the Jayhawks' last trip down there. But Jalen Daniels, his group, that defense led by Kobe Bryant, Kenny Logan, and Rich Miller, they're not going to be intimidated. They've been in there and won before. And while Coach doesn't necessarily want to live in the past and talk too much about 2021, you can't undersell the value of having a successful experience down there when it comes to feeling comfortable and not letting the size of the stage or the bright lights overwhelm and intimidate you. That will not be the case for Kansas on Saturday. You would not think, based on what we saw 2 years ago and the vast majority of guys that are back from that experience in Austin in 2021.
Texas opened up as a 17.5-point favorite over the Jayhawks. I don't know what the line is now, and not that it really matters, but one thing I do want to point out is Texas beat Alabama in Tuscaloosa. That's obviously a really good or great win. But Alabama didn't have Bryce Young or Tua or Mac Jones at quarterback. Okay, they've actually been playing three different quarterbacks already this year. Alabama has. Now I would imagine, I'm sure Alabama has more of the high star recruits than Kansas does. They probably are more talented as a whole, and we know all about Nick Saban. Although Lance Leipold's not a bad coach either, but quarterback play is so paramount in all of football at every level. Jalen Daniels is a better quarterback than anybody saw against Alabama this year. And Steve Sarkisian's already talked about it this week, about he can hurt you with your legs. He can equally hurt you with his arm. This is a type of quarterback that, as far as I know, Texas hasn't seen yet this year.
No, I completely agree. And I think there's a reason why he's picked preseason number one in the conference as the offensive player of the year. He's thought of as, you know, the most talented guy in this conference. And it's definitely a much more stable position for the Kansas roster than it is Alabama right now, which, again, is crazy to say out loud, but very much the truth. And so, yeah, I think Texas will be tested in ways that they haven't yet this season. Now, having said that, the Alabama offensive line protecting whoever their quarterback is probably bigger and more established than the KU line, but the Kansas offensive line is much improved. I think the key here is for Jalen, knowing that this front seven, chock full of linebackers and future, chock full of All-American linebackers and future NFL first and second round draft picks, knowing they're going to be bringing the heat far greater than what they faced. And this is where the Illinois game in week two helps, because you did have two defensive tackles that were All-Americans on that front. But Jalen's got to get the ball out fast. No hero ball, you know, running around trying to wait for something to open it up downfield. That's where you get sacked, you lose 15, you fumble, something like that. I think they're going to do things to make quicker than ever reads, timing plays where, I mean, one Mississippi, two, and the ball's out, and then just carve them up in little chunks as best you can, because I don't know that he's going to be afforded the time to really allow for those deep balls to set up a ton. There'll be plays where they do, where they roll them out and they buy some time. But in general, I think it's all about, you know, finding the timing and the angles and the right plays to execute in little chunks, as opposed to stand back there and hope for the home run ball. I just don't know that it's going to be there against a front that will be as imposing as you'll face all year. So for Jalen, decisive, quick reads, and you know, that precision accuracy that when he's in rhythm, we know he can bring. And I think Kansas can start to move the ball and hopefully, you know, match them drive for drive and maybe even play from out in front if you get the ball first. But that's as much a key as anything. And then obviously, hey, they ran for 427 yards against us a year ago.
Yeah.
Coach Borland knows that number. Somebody mentioned, yeah, they, in the press conference yesterday, they had a pretty big day against you last year. He interrupted a mid-sentence, which he never does, and he says, yeah, 427, but who's counting? We know that Bijan Robinson and Roschon Johnson are now starting in the NFL with the Falcons and Bears, respectively, and we know that those guys aren't walking through that door. But Brooks is really good, Jonathan Brooks, and he had a long TD against Kansas a year ago, and that O-line is loaded. You know, the NIL arrangements they have to get the best O-linemen in the state of Texas is something that nobody could compete with, you know, when he talks about getting these five-star guys up front. So the KU defensive objective in containing the run, coming off your best week you could possibly have, holding BYU to 9 yards on 22 carries, it's so much tougher a week later. And so it sounds so cliche, but assignment sound, you know, trying to get help, run support help from the DBs, contain the edge, give them up to 4 or 5 yards of carry, not the big gashers, force them in third down throws, and see if you can get off the field, because this is a whole different animal than what you were up against last week. So that, again, you know, is one of the big things to watch and look for. So I know we talked about the importance of winning the battle in the trenches last week, and it proved to be the big swing for Kansas because they did fare really well on both sides in the trenches. It's just as important this week, but it's three or four times harder. So we'll see what that looks like for Kansas. But that's not to sound doom and gloom at all, because if you give Jalen just enough time, and he is quick with his reads, as we talked about, I think there's pockets within this defense that Kansas can get after and move the ball, absolutely. And I think they've got playmakers that, while they may not have the four- or five-star shine and gleam on their bio and resume, are just as productive Big 12 players as the Xavier Worthies and the Whittington types that Texas can put out there. So it's certainly doable, but it's one of those things where you don't have to play a perfect game, but you got to play a clean game, and you got to execute some of those keys and not allow the self-inflicted wounds of some of those penalties that just extended their drives and cost us our drives in the first half last week versus BYU and throughout the game versus Nevada. Kansas can't have that. Got to play as clean a game as possible when it comes to those self-inflicted wounds.
Can you imagine the narrative if Kansas goes down and wins in Austin for the second straight time, and the last time you have a shot at beating them because they're going to the SEC next year? Can you imagine the narrative? It would be exactly what we kind of started out with, and you could say we're kind of dreaming a little bit, but it's not a dream. If you go down and you beat Texas and you start the Big 12 2-0 and you win at supposedly the favorite to win the Big 12, you win that game, the narrative on Monday morning is across the country is going to be, hey, can you believe what Leipold's done at Kansas? They have a chance to win the Big 12. I mean, now granted, it's a big, big task to go to Austin and win again, but the narrative would be insane. It would be a national narrative.
It would be. And they probably also, in the same breath, the SEC media would take a shout to Big 12 and say,
sure,
well, the Big 12's not as smart as we thought it was.
Of course.
But yeah, it would be. And you'd be talking about, okay, does Lance need another new contract and all this stuff?
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden, you know, Kansas is the national team of the week and he's the national coach of the week and yada, yada, yada. But beyond all that, if it were to happen, just to go down this hypothetical road, you're in the catbird seat as suddenly the team to beat, you know, for that inside track to Dallas. And again, we're not talking about finishing first in the regular season. We're talking about finishing in the top two in the regular season. That's what it takes to get invited. And so you do that, to use a golf analogy, you've now birdied the number one handicap hole, and you're, you know, a leader in the clubhouse, so to speak, with still a lot of golf left to be played. But the point is, you're out in front of the pack with the toughest one out of the way, and it's an unbalanced schedule where not everybody's going to have to play Texas or let alone go to Austin. But to do that, if Kansas was able to, man, you've just put yourself in such you know, inside pole position, to use a racing term, you know, to have a chance at one of those top two seats. And I think that's what's right there for the taking. Now, if you don't get it, well, hey, you weren't expected to.
Mm-hmm.
Back it up by coming back and protecting your home field versus UCF. You're probably going to have a chance to, if not be favored, a pickup game at Oklahoma State. I think KU will probably be favored going down there. And so we mentioned this on last week's show. If you broke the segments, you know, of this Big 12 conference season up into one-month chunks, go 3-1 in this first chunk, and whether that includes a win in Austin or not, if you do that, you're still on pace. And so if you get a win in Austin, then obviously expectations change all the more. But, I think there's a lot to be gained this week. There isn't a ton to be lost unless you just get boat raced, and I don't think anybody expects that to happen with a team as well-coached as this one.
Yeah, I mean, even if you lose at Texas, you got Central Florida at home. You're probably favored at Oklahoma State, as you mentioned, favored. Oklahoma, you get them at home. At Iowa State, they struggle offensively. You host Texas Tech, who's off to a tough start, but it'd be at home. K-State, I mean, really arguably the two toughest games after the Texas game for KU is Oklahoma and K-State, and they're both at home, and then on the road at Cincinnati to close it out. So, you know, I'm not going to lie to you. When we asked you before the season began, we asked about, you know, record-wise, and you talked about the ceiling at 10-2. And I know Dusty and I were like, wow, that's higher ceiling than we anticipated hearing, but that's what you told us. You said, you know, 7-5, 8-4, 8-4 sounds about middle, floor 6-6, and you said the ceiling 10-2. And I had some people that listened to the show like, wow, that's pretty optimistic. But you know what? Even if you do lose to Texas, You're 4-0, you're 4-1, you win the next two, you're 6-1 going into an Oklahoma game. It's definitely doable to get the 10 wins. And if you get the 10 wins and you have two conference losses, you might just win some kind of wild tiebreaker and you go to Dallas anyway. So it is pretty amazing what KU's been able to accomplish and going 4-0 two straight years. Last year started 5-0, but you're right. If you beat Texas, I'd be worried as heck about a trap game then with Central Florida, because everybody's going to be talking about how great you are after winning in Austin. So that would be I'd be leery of that game. But win or lose against Texas, Kansas is in pretty decent shape, at least as you mentioned early on. And so I think there is reason to be optimistic. But at the same time, what happens then if KU does start 6-1 or they beat Texas? Don't the expectations change around Lawrence? And sometimes expectations can get too high too soon.
Well, we had this exact conversation a year ago, and expectations were changing at 5-0. And then we were reminded about how quickly it can all crumble in a sport with the attrition of football, with the brutal nature of the game, where injuries can alter your season with one play. And so, the answer is yes, but it's also no. Yes, the expectations would change if you get this win, and trajectory and talk and all that becomes different. But no, we can't get too far out in front of ourselves, because you know that, it could all come crashing down. Now, what Kansas has that most teams don't is two really impressive starting quarterback caliber players at that position. And the fact that Jason Bean waits in the wings, a year better, a year more experienced, more confident, all that. If he ever did have to step in, you feel like you still got a great chance. But to be clear, when we talked in August and I mentioned ceilings versus floors, my prediction was 8-4.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
I still feel very solid about 8-4. But the things break just right type scenario to go 10-2, I think that's certainly realistic. And this league, if anything, has proven to be more wide open than we thought it might be.
Yes.
Because some teams that we thought might rise up, like a Texas Tech, for example, have not. And other teams have been worse than we thought they might be. Unfortunately, two of those aren't on KU's schedule. But the point is, this league's pretty open. And 10-2 doesn't seem far-fetched at all. But let's just see how they do this week, and then we'll reassess then. But I do think that the 8-4 prediction I gave you back in the summer months feels pretty good right now, because they got the swing game versus Illinois. They got another swing game versus BYU. Some of those ones that can propel you or catapult you by a couple of lines in the standings and notches on the pecking order have gone KU's way. Now, if you steal one you weren't supposed to get, that's where you're looking at a whole different level.
Absolutely. All right, time for the off-the-wall question. Brian, today is National Ask a Stupid Question Day, okay? National Ask a Stupid Question Day. Now, I've heard people say there's no such thing as a dumb question. I disagree slightly on certain ones that I've heard, but for the most part, there's not too many out there, but there probably are a few. So, Brian, we want your best shot. What is the stupidest question that you've either asked yourself, or you've been asked, or you can think of that somebody could ask? What would be a good stupid question to ask on National Ask a Stupid Question Day?
Well, when you first said that, I immediately thought of every head coach I've ever covered who would absolutely disagree with the notion that there's no such thing as a stupid question, because I've seen them give the evil eye and stare down at the reporter that asked a stupid question. I think I've made this mistake even recently in journalism, but the worst thing you do as a sports reporter is make any reference to a game that is not the immediate opponent in front of you. If you look ahead at all, the head coach, even if it's not a stupid question, he will not like the question. He is all focused about the game that's in the here and the now, and so that's the biggest mistake. I made that mistake when I was like 22 years old and asking Roy Williams on a Selection Sunday press conference about the draw that he had in this Oklahoma City first and second round region, where there was a chance to play either Memphis, coached by a former KU grad assistant named John Calipari, or Arizona State, and that there were interesting storylines with both. And I made the mistake of asking him about that, assuming they were going to win the 1-16 matchup, and he did not like that one bit. So it's not that the question was stupid, but I think for any young aspiring sports journalists out there, never just project or extrapolate one or two games down the line. Head coaches hate that, because they don't want their team looking ahead.
Right.
They want their team focused where their boots are planted, so to speak. And so that's one of the worst things you can do. But beyond that, there's a ton of stupid questions I've heard over the years, but I don't want to throw those people under the bus. And, we've all asked them, that's for sure. We've all had our moment.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like that one. I think a stupid one now would be, who is Taylor Swift? I mean, I think everybody knows who Taylor Swift is. Maybe not. Maybe there's somebody that doesn't out in the world, but that would be one that you could use after she's been at the Chiefs game, and now she'll be apparently at the Jets game on Sunday night. Hey, man, it's going to be interesting, no doubt about it, coming up on Saturday. Big game for KU, and as we've already talked about, what a huge win it would be if they can go to Austin and win and knock off the Longhorns again on the road. Have a great call. Safe travels. We'll talk to you again next week, my friend.
All right, thanks so much. Always a pleasure.
Take care. That's Brian Hayden, the voice of the Jayhawks, brought to you each and every week by Anderson Insurance Agency, Data Farm, Home, Auto Life, and Crop Insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Millen Boulevard, or call them at 738-5701.